A Wanderer in the Spirit Lands by Francesco. Transcribed by Farnese. Introductions. Preface by the transcriber. The following narrative was written more than a year ago. 1895. And in giving it to the public I do not claim to be its author, since I have only acted the part of an amanuensis and endeavored to write down as truthfully and as carefully as I could, the words given to me by the spirit author himself, who is one of several spirits who have desired me to write down for them their experiences in the spirit world. I have had to write the words as fast as my pen could travel over the paper, and many of the experiences described and opinions advanced are quite contrary to what I myself believe to be in accordance with the conditions of life in the world of spirits. The spirit author Francesco I have frequently seen materialized, and he has been recognized on these occasions by friends who knew him in earth life. Having given the narrative to the public as I received it from the spirit author, I must leave with him all responsibility for the opinions expressed and the scenes described. Farnese. London, 1896. Dedication by the author to those who toil still in the mists and darkness of uncertainty which veil the future of their earthly lives, I dedicate this record of the wanderings of one who has passed from earth life into the hidden mysteries of the life beyond, in the hope that through my experiences now given to the world, some may be induced to pause in their downward career and think ere they pass from the mortal life, as I did, with all their unrepented sins thick upon them. It is to those of my brethren who are treading fast upon the downward path, that I would fain hope to speak, with the power which truth ever has over those who do not blindly seek to shut it out, for if the after consequences of a life spent in dissipation and selfishness are often terrible even during the earth life, they are doubly so in the spirit world, where all disguise is stripped from the soul, and it stands forth in all the naked hideousness of its sins, with the scars of the spiritual disease contracted in its earthly life stamped upon its spirit form, never to be effaced but by the healing powers of sincere repentance and the cleansing waters of its own sorrowful tears. I now ask these dwellers upon earth to believe that if these weary travelers of the other life can return to warn their brothers yet on earth, they are eager to do so. I would have them to understand that spirits who materialize have a higher mission to perform than even the solacing of those who mourn in deep affliction for the beloved they have lost. I would have them to look and see that now even at the 11th hour of man's pride and sin, these spirit wanderers are permitted by the Great Supreme to go back and tell them the fate of all who outrage the laws of God and man. I would have even the idle and frivolous to pause and think whether spiritualism be not something higher, holier, nobler, than the passing of an idle hour in speculations as to whether there are occult forces which can move a table or rap out the alphabet, and whether it is not possible that these feeble raps and apparently unmeaning tips and tilts of a table are but the opening doors through which a flood of light is being let in upon the dark places of earth and of the nether world, faint signs that those who have gone before do now return to earth to warn their brethren. As a warrior who has fought and conquered, I look back upon the scenes of those battles and the toils through which I have passed, and I feel that all has been cheaply won, all has been gained for which I hoped and strove, and I seek now but to point out the better way to others who are yet in the storm and stress of battle, that they may use the invaluable time given to them upon earth to enter upon and follow with unfaltering step the shining path which shall lead them home to rest in peace at last. Francesco. Part I, Days of Darkness. Chapter 1, My Death. I have been a wanderer through a far country, in those lands that have no name, no place, for you of earth, and I would set down as briefly as I can my wanderings, that those whose feet are pointed to that bourne may know what may in their turn await them. On earth and in my life of earth I lived as those do who seek only how the highest point of self-gratification can be reached. If I was not unkind to some, if I was indulgent to those I loved, yet it was ever with the feeling that they in return must minister to my gratification, that from them I might purchase by my gifts and my affection the love and homage which was as my life to me. I was talented, highly gifted both in mind and person, and from my earliest years the praise of others was ever given to me, and was ever my sweetest incense. No thought ever came to me of that all-self-sacrificing love which can sink itself so completely in the love for others that there is no thought, no hope of happiness, but in securing the happiness of the beloved ones. In all my life, and amongst those women whom I loved, as men of earth too often miscall that which is but a passion too low and base to be dignified by the name of love, amongst all those women who from time to time captivated my fancy, there was not one who ever appealed to my higher nature sufficiently to make me feel this was true love, this the ideal for which in secret I sighed. In everyone I found something to disappoint me. They loved me as I loved them, no more, no less. The passion I gave one but its counterpart from them, and thus I passed on unsatisfied, longing for I knew not what. Mistakes I made, ah! How many sins I committed, not a few, yet the world was often at my feet to praise me and call me good, and noble, and gifted. I was fated, caressed, the spoiled darling of the dames of fashion. I had but to woo to win, and when I won all turned to bitter ashes in my teeth. And then there came a time upon which I shall not dwell, when I made the most fatal mistake of all and spoiled two lives where I had wrecked but one before. It was not a golden flowery wreath of roses that I wore, but a bitter chain, fetters as of iron that galled and bruised me till at last I snapped them asunder and walked forth free. Free, ah, me! Never again should I be free. For never for one moment can our past errors and mistakes cease to dog our footsteps and clog our wings while we live, aye, and after the life of the body is ended, till one by one we have atoned for them, and thus blotted them from our past. And then it was, when I deemed myself secure from all love, when I thought I had learned all that love could teach, knew all that woman had to give, that I met one woman. Ah! What shall I call her? She was more than mortal woman in my eyes, and I called her the good angel of my life, and from the first moment that I knew her I bowed down at her feet and gave her all the love of my soul, of my higher self, a love that was poor and selfish when compared to what it should have been, but it was all I had to give, and I gave it all. For the first time in my life I thought of another more than of myself, and though I could not rise to the pure thoughts, the bright fancies that filled her soul, I thank God I never yielded to the temptation to drag her down to me. As so time went on, I sunned myself in her sweet presence, I grew in holy thoughts that I deemed had left me forever, I dreamed sweet dreams in which I was freed from those chains to my past that held me so cruelly, so hardly, now when I sought for better things. And from my dreams I ever woke to the fear that another might win her from me, and to the knowledge that I, alas, had not the right to say one word to hold her back. Ah, me! The bitterness and the suffering of those days. I knew it was myself alone who had built that wall between us. I felt that I was not fit to touch her, soiled as I was in the world's ways. How could I dare to take that innocent, pure life and link it to my own? At times hope would whisper it might be so, but reason said ever, no. And though she was so kind, so tender to me that I read the innocent secret of her love, I knew, I felt, that on earth she never would be mine. Her purity and her truth raised between us a barrier I could never pass. I tried to leave her. In vain. As a magnet is drawn to the pole, so was I ever drawn back to her, till at last I struggled no more. I strove only to enjoy the happiness that her presence gave. Happy that at least the pleasure and the sunshine of her presence was not denied me. And then, ah! Then there came for me an awful, and unexpected day, when with no warning, no sign to awaken me to my position, I was suddenly snatched from life and plunged into that gulf, that death of the body which awaits us all. And I knew not that I had died. I passed from some hours of suffering and agony into sleep, deep, dreamless sleep. And when I awoke it was to find myself alone and in total darkness. I could rise, I could move, surely I was better. But where was I? Why this darkness? Why was no light left with me? I arose and groped as one does in a dark room, but I could find no light, hear no sound. There was nothing but the stillness, the darkness of death around me. Then I thought I would walk forward and find the door. I could move, though slowly and feebly, and I groped on, for how long I know not. It seemed hours, for in my growing horror and dismay I felt I must find someone, some way out of this place, and to my despair I seemed never to find any door, any wall, anything. All seemed space and darkness round me. Overcome at last, I called out aloud. I shrieked, and no voice answered me. Then again and again I called, and still the silence, still no echo, even from my own voice, came back to cheer me. I bethought me of her I loved, but something made me shrink from uttering her name there. Then I thought of all the friends I had known, and I called on them, but none answered me. Was I in prison? No. A prison has walls and this place had none. Was I mad? Delirious? What? I could feel myself, my body. It was the same. Surely the same? No. There was some change in me. I could not tell what, but I felt as though I was shrunken and deformed. My features, when I passed my hand over them, seemed larger, coarser, distorted surely. Oh, for a light! Oh, for anything to tell me even the worst that could be told! Would no one come? Was I quite alone? And she, my angel of light, oh! Where was she? Before my sleep she had been with me, where was she now? Something seemed to snap in my brain and in my throat, and I called wildly to her by name, to come to me, if but for once more. I felt a terrible sense as if I had lost her, and I called and called to her wildly, and for the first time my voice had a sound and rang back to me through that awful darkness. Before me, far, far away, came a tiny speck of light like a star that grew and grew and came nearer and nearer till at last it appeared before me as a large ball of light, in shape like a star, and in the star I saw my beloved. Her eyes were closed as if one in sleep, but her arms were held out to me and her gentle voice said in those tones I knew so well, "Oh, my love, where are you now? I cannot see you, I only hear your voice, I only hear you call to me, and my soul answers to yours." I tried to rush to her, but I could not. Some invisible force held me back, and around her seemed a ring I could not pass through. In an agony I sank to the ground, calling upon her to leave me no more. Then she seemed to grow unconscious, her head sank upon her breast, and I saw her float away from me as though some strong arms had borne her. I sought to rise and follow her, but could not. It was as if a great chain held me fast, and after some fruitless struggles I sank upon the ground in unconsciousness. When I awoke again I was overjoyed to see that my beloved one had returned to me. She was standing near, looking this time as I had seen her on earth, but pale and sad and all dressed in black. The star was gone, and all around was darkness, yet not utter darkness, since around her was a pale, faint glow of light by which I could see she carried flowers, white flowers, in her hands. She stooped over a long low mound of fresh earth. I drew nearer and nearer and saw that she was silently weeping as she laid down the flowers on that low mound. Her voice murmured softly, oh, my love, will you never come back to me? Can you be indeed dead, and gone where my love cannot follow you? Where you can hear my voice no more? My love. Oh, my dear love. She was kneeling down now, and I drew near, very near, though I could not touch her, and as I knelt down I, too, looked at that long low mound. A shock of horror passed over me, for I knew now, at last, that I was dead, and this was my own grave. Chapter 2, Despair. Dead. Dead. I wildly cried. Oh, no, surely no. For the dead feel nothing more, they turn to dust. They molder to decay, and all is gone, all is lost to them, they have no more consciousness of anything, unless, indeed, my boasted philosophy of life has been all wrong, all false, and the soul of the dead still lives even though the body decays. The priests of my own church had taught me so, but I had scorned them as fools, blind and knavish, who for their own ends taught that men lived again and could only get to heaven through a gate, of which they held the keys. Keys that turned only for gold and at the bidding of those who were paid to say masses for the departed soul, priests who made dupes of silly frightened women and weak-minded men, who, yielding to the terror inspired by their awful tales of hell and purgatory, gave themselves, bodies and souls, to purchase the elusive privilege they promised. I would have none of them. My knowledge of these priests and the inner hidden lives of many of them had been too great for me to listen to their idle tales, their empty promises of a pardon they could not give, and I had said I would face death when it came, with the courage of those who know only that for them it must mean total extinction, for if these priests were wrong, who was right? Who could tell us anything of the future, or if there were any God at all? Not the living, for they but theorize and guess, and not the dead, for none came back from them to tell, and now I stood beside this grave, my own grave, and heard my beloved call me dead and strew flowers upon it. As I looked, the solid man grew transparent before my eyes, and I saw down to the coffin with my own name and the date of my death upon it, and through the coffin I saw the white still form I knew as myself lying within. I saw to my horror that this body had already begun to decay and become a loathsome thing to look upon. Its beauty was gone, its features none would recognize, and I stood there, conscious, looking down upon it and then at myself. I felt each limb, traced out with my hands each familiar feature of my face, and knew I was dead, and yet I lived. If this were death, then those priests must have been right after all. The dead lived, but were. In what state? Was this darkness hell? For me they would have found no other place. I was so lost, so beyond the pale of their church that for me they would not have found a place even in purgatory. I had cast off all ties to their church. I had so scorned it, deeming that a church which knew of, and yet tolerated, the shameful and ambitious lives of many of its most honored dignitaries had no claim to call itself a spiritual guide for anyone. There were good men in the church, true, but there was also this mass of shameless evil ones whose lives were common talk, common matter of ridicule, yet the church that claimed to be the example to all men and to hold all truth, did not cast out these men of disgraceful lives. No, she advanced them to yet higher posts of honor. None who have lived in my native land and seen the terrible abuses of power in her church will wonder that a nation should rise and seek to cast off such a yoke. Those who can recall the social and political condition of Italy in the earlier half of this century, and the part the Church of Rome played in helping the oppressor to rivet the fetters with which she was bound, and who know how her domestic life was honeycombed with spies, priests as well as laymen, still a man feared to whisper his true sentiments to his nearest and dearest lest she should betray him to the priest and he again to the government. How the dungeons were crowded with unhappy men, yea, even with mere lads guilty of no crime save love of their native land and hatred of its oppressors. Those, I say, who know all this will not wonder at the fierce indignation and burning passion which smoldered in the breast of Italia's sons, and burst at last into a conflagration which consumed man's faith in God and in his so-called vicar upon earth, and like a mountain torrent that has burst its bounds, swept away men's hopes of immortality, if only through submission to the decrees of the church it was to be obtained. Such, then, had been my attitude of revolt and scorn towards the church in which I had been baptized, and that church could have no place within her pale for me. If her anathemas could send a soul to hell, surely I must be there. And yet as I thought thus I looked again upon my beloved, and I thought she could never have come to hell even to look for me. She seemed mortal enough, and if she knelt by my grave surely I must be still upon earth. Did the dead then never leave the earth at all, but hover near the scenes of their earthly lives? With such and many similar thoughts crowding through my brain I strove to get nearer to her I so loved, but found I could not. An invisible barrier seemed to surround her and keep me back. I could move on either side of her as I pleased, nearer or farther, but her I could not touch. Vain were all my efforts. Then I spoke, I called to her by name. I told her that I was there, that I was still conscious, still the same, though I was dead, and she never seemed to hear, she never saw me. She still wept sadly and silently, still tenderly touched the flowers, murmuring to herself that I had so loved flowers, surely I would know that she had put them there for me. Again and again I spoke to her as loudly as I could, but she heard me not. She was deaf to my voice. She only moved uneasily and passed her hand over her head as one in a dream, and then slowly and sadly she went away. I strove with all my might to follow her. In vain, I could go but a few yards from the grave and my earthly body, and then I saw why. A chain as of dark silk thread, it seemed no thicker than a spider's web, held me to my body. No power of mine could break it. As I moved it stretched like elastic, but always drew me back again. Worst of all, I began now to be conscious of feeling the corruption of that decaying body affecting my spirit, as a limb that has become poisoned affects with suffering the whole body on earth, and a fresh horror filled my soul. Then a voice as of some majestic being spoke to me in the darkness, and said, "You love that body more than your soul. Watch it now as it turns to dust and know what it was that you worshipped, and ministered and clung to. Know how perishable it was, how vile it has become, and look upon your spirit body and see how you have starved and cramped and neglected it for the sake of the enjoyments of the earthly body. Behold how poor and repulsive and deformed your earthly life has made your soul, which is immortal and divine and to endure forever." And I looked and beheld myself. As in a mirror held up before me, I saw myself. Oh, horror! It was beyond doubt myself. But, oh! So awfully changed, so vile, so full of baseness did I appear, so repulsive in every feature, even my figure was deformed. I shrank back in horror at my appearance, and prayed that the earth might open before my feet and hide me from all eyes forevermore. Ah! Never again would I call upon my love, never more desire that she should see me. Better, far better, that she should think of me as dead and gone from her forever, better that she should have only the memory of me as I had been in earthly life than ever know how awful was the change, how horrible a thing was my real self. Alas! Alas! My despair, my anguish was extreme, and I called out wildly and struck myself and tore my hair in wild and passionate horror of myself, and then my passion exhausted me and I sank senseless and unconscious of all once more. Again I waked, and again it was the presence of my love that awaked me. She had brought more flowers, and she murmured more soft tender thoughts of me as she laid them on my grave. But I did not seek now to make her see me. No, I shrank back and sought to hide myself, and my heart grew hard even to her, and I said, "Rather let her weep for the one who has gone than know that he still lives." So I let her go. And as soon as she was gone, I called frantically to her to come back in any way, to any knowledge of my awful position, rather than leave me in that place to see her no more. She did not hear, but she felt my call. And afar off I saw her stop and half turn round as though to return, then she passed on again and left me. Twice, three times she came again, and each time when she came I felt the same shrinking from approaching her, and each time when she left I felt the same wild longing to bring her back and keep her near me. But I called to her no more, for I knew the dead call in vain, the living hear them not. And to all the world I was dead, and only to myself and to my awful fate was I alive. Ah! Now I knew death was no endless sleep, no calm oblivion. Better, far better had it been so, and in my despair I prayed that this total oblivion might be granted to me, and as I prayed I knew it never could, for man is an immortal soul, and for good or evil, weal or woe, lives on eternally. His earthly form decays and turns to dust, but the spirit, which is the true man, knows no decay, no oblivion. Each day, for I felt that days were passing over me, my mind awoke more and more, and I saw clearer and clearer the events of my life pass in a long procession before me, dim at first, then by degrees growing stronger and clearer, and I bowed my head in anguish, helpless, hopeless anguish, for I felt it must be too late now to undo one single act.